you want really good coffee to take on your next adventure, use CS Instant Coffee. You can find out more about them at csinstant.coffee.
My first 10 or 12 years professionally, I worked helping folks who were living without a home, whether staying in shelters or on the streets. I would never have done that work if I didn't start to realize that there are people out there in the world that need some support.
This is the Adventure Sports Podcast, where we hear stories of adventure from every corner of the planet. We interview all sorts of folks who are using their sport to explore the world around them and give you the inspiration you need to get out there and have some fun. So first of all, I got a couple things to tell you. One, this episode is from my new show called Without Compromise through Athletic Brewing, where we interview folks who are essentially pursuing crazy ideas, just like our idea at Athletic Brewing of brewing non-alcoholic craft beer is pretty crazy. We essentially want to talk to folks in our community who are chasing equally crazy ideas. And this episode, this interview in particular, is with Kyle Robidoux, and he is blind. He is legally blind, and he is an ultra runner and runs about 25 hours a week, which is about 80 miles a week. And yeah, the guy's, you know, his eyesight gets worse every year. He has something called retinitis pigmentosa, where his field of view essentially closes in year after year. And back in 2010, he was sick and tired of not being able to play with his daughter. And it wasn't because he was blind. It was because he was out of shape. He had ballooned to about 250 pounds and decided to start walking. And then at some point, picked up the pace and started running. It's a pretty incredible story. And he advocates for folks all around the world who are facing some sort of challenge. He works in this capacity for his day job, but also continues to break molds and to break barriers of what people think he should have. So it's an incredibly inspiring story, but I thought it would be a great way to also a great interview for Thursday's episode. You know, we typically do a throwback Thursday episode, but I thought, you know, let's put in this. It's awesome. This guy does all sorts of trail runs as well. And so you'll hear kind of how he does that and why he does it. And it's very inspiring. But before we get started, I also wanted to say we have an adventure grant with Athletic Brewing right now. It's $1,000 that we're giving away to somebody who is planning an adventure for 2020, who is also planning to make a difference with that adventure, whether it's raising money or awareness for some sort of cause. We are extremely passionate about the marriage between adventure and purpose. And so folks who are doing that, if someone out there has an idea, please, or you know someone that might have an idea, please send them the link. Link is in the show notes. You can also Google Athletic Brewing Adventure Grant. So that's all for announcements. Let's jump into today's episode and get inspired. All right, everyone, welcome to the show. Today we're talking to Kyle Robidoux.
Hey, Mason, thanks so much for having me on.
Yeah, absolutely. I'd love to go all the way back to the beginning of your story and hear where you grew up and kind of what your childhood was like, if you don't mind.
Sure. So I was born in Central Mass, but moved to Maine when I was 8. So Southern Maine, kind of coastal inland town, and lived there all the way until I went to college and was, you know, kind of a traditional upbringing, kind of middle upper class and super active, played pretty much every sport imaginable. If there was a ball, I was playing.
What was your favorite?
By far, baseball. And then once I started skiing definitely took over, and soccer and football as well.
All right. Very cool. So, you know, folks heard in the intro, you know, you were born with retinitis pigmentosa, but it took a while before that started progressing. Is that correct? When did you start to notice issues with that?
So I was diagnosed with what we call RP at 11 and declared legally blind at 19. So I met that peripheral vision threshold for legal blindness. And I never had Well, I always had very poor, if any, night vision or ability to see in dimly lit areas. That always affected me. But other than that, I kind of got along just fine playing sports and socially and moving around. I did never have a driver's license. That was a choice my parents and I made. But other than that, I kind of got along with the usable vision that I had at the time until about my mid, late 20s.
So did it progressively get worse or more limited as you got older? Is that just how it works?
Yes. So RP is a degenerative eye disease that progresses over time. So for me, my RP works kind of from the outside in. So it affects your peripheral vision first and then kind of just closes in from there. Right now, I'm down to about a 3 to 4% field of vision, which means I just have very restricted or constricted tunnel vision. Yet I do have corrected 20/40, 20/50 vision.
Over time, it just seems it'll close in like that. Now, what does that mean for your future? Is it eventually going to completely close in?
RP presents itself differently with everyone, but it is very, very likely that I will lose maybe not all of my vision, but probably get as low as just light vision or the ability or light perception. So I have some friends who are 5 or 6 years older than me with RP that when I first started hanging out with them 8 or 9 years ago, they're kind of where I'm at now. And now they're down to kind of light perception or just really, really limited usable vision. But it's hard to put a timeline on it, so which also makes it really hard to prepare for.
Absolutely. And I mean, if you don't mind me asking, how does that make you feel? How do you view the future?
I try to be as honest as possible, and it scares me. You know, it scares me to think that there will be a time where I don't have even the usable vision that I have now. Just tonight, I was walking home from an evening meeting, and I got totally turned around and took a couple, and it was at night, and I took a couple steps, and unbeknownst to me, I walked into the road with cars coming, where I thought I was actually on a sidewalk, and hadn't reached the road yet. So it's hard to plan for, but I've also learned through years of therapy and support from my family that I can really just live in the present and prepare for the future and just go about things as best I can.
Yeah, sorry, man. We're just jumping right into it, getting all deep right off the get-go. But
yeah, no worries.
I just think when we talk about this stuff that's difficult in life, it's so much more applicable to people and what they're going through. But I want to ask you this, too. We can come back to that in a little bit. I know in 2010, you started running. Can you tell me what happened then? What happened in your life to where you just wanted to pick that up all of a sudden out of nowhere?
So I was always active and I ran to kind of be in shape for sports but there was certainly a period of time where I was no longer active and I was well over 250 pounds and all my health indicators were off the charts. I was on the path for type 2 diabetes, which, you know, my father just passed away this past November, partly to, you know, my cholesterol was through the roof and my daughter at the time was 2 and I was, you know, having a really hard time just playing with her and bending over to tie my shoes and just came to a point where I realized I had to do something and I didn't want to take medication for cholesterol and health reasons. So I just started walking and then running from there.
And so it wasn't the limited sight that prevented you from playing with your daughter. It was the fact that you were out of shape. So why running? Is it because walking gradually progressed into faster and faster? Was it just easy to start walking?
Yeah, I think it was easy to start walking. I worked right next to a park and it's a popular park to run in. And like I said, I'd always been active, but there was a period of time as my vision started to decrease a bit more rapidly in which I convinced myself that I could no longer run safely on my own. And I really wasn't aware of this whole beautiful network of sighted guides. So I just kind of you know, subconsciously convinced myself that I couldn't be active anymore. I all but stopped skiing. I maybe skied once or twice a season, and I wasn't really active anymore, partly because of I didn't think I could be because of my vision.
Did just thinking I'm limited prevent you from maybe Googling other options or just even trying to look into other options? And do you think that is, I mean, I feel like that's what a lot of people face with all sorts of challenges.
I think at that time I was certainly depressed and pretty angry, bitter about my vision and things that I love to do, like playing recreational baseball and skiing to the best of my ability, were being taken away from me. And that kind of just transferred over to a little bit of running that I had been doing. And I wasn't connected to any sort of community. Like, I started working where I work now 6 years ago. And prior to that, I never met another person who was blind or visually impaired before. So I didn't know anything about programs and resources that I know now.
You never interacted or knew anyone else that was visually impaired?
No, except for the doctor's office. I'd sit there and be like, you know, I'd whisper to my parents, like, wow, I think that person's like totally blind. That must be wild, right? But yeah, that's the only time I interacted with someone was in the doctor's office.
I had to be incredibly lonely.
I mean, it was not lonely in the sense of, you know, I still continue to have a really strong social network. I had friends and I was active and socially, you know, I had roommates and all that, you know, sort of stuff. But I just wasn't connected to the blindness or adaptive sport community at that time. You know, growing up skiing, I certainly saw, you know, folks wearing orange bibs in the back of my head. I was like, wow, maybe that will be me someday. But I just also wasn't mentally ready to make that jump into adaptive skiing with a guide. And quite frankly, I didn't know that running guides existed because I hadn't really I hadn't raced before. I just ran, you know, 4 or 5 miles to stay in shape, but I hadn't done any races. So I didn't even know that, you know, this concept of sighted guides existed running wise.
So, you know, you started walking around the park and then you started running. How did your career in this progress, your running abilities progress? When did you see guides? When did you start saying, I'm going to enter a competition? How did that come about?
I hesitate. I don't know if I quite have a running career, but thanks. you know, I started racing and joining, you know, my first race was a half marathon, and then I took about a year to build up to a marathon. And I had probably run 4 or 5 marathons. Almost every marathon I ran all of them by myself, although I did run the first marathon kind of with my sister-in-law formally as my guide. But then I, once, you know, 3 or 4 miles in, I just kind of took off and ran on my own, which for the most part I could manage. I did, you know, figure out a way to pretty much fall every marathon. You know, I'd trip over an orange cone or I would hit someone in the water stops, but I didn't know. And then when I started working at the Massachusetts Association for the Blind and Visually Impaired, where I work now, I started there in September and I ran a marathon Columbus Day weekend in October. And the next day I came into work and my knees were all bloody and my coworker was like, hey, how'd it go? I was like, oh, it was great. I ran hard, but I fell like not even a half mile in and I skinned my knee up and ran the rest of the race with, you know, blood all over my knees. And he joked and said, have you ever run with a sighted guide? And I was like, I don't know what you're talking about. I know that there's ski guides, but there are people who you run with too. And he said, yeah, let me introduce you to some folks. So that was October. And then that December, I flew out to California for the California International Marathon. And that was the first race I ran with a sighted guide.
Was it difficult to get used to?
It was a little bit of a transition. I mean, it's an evolution for someone like me in which my vision progresses. So when I first started running with guides, I just ran side by side without a tether, so with no string attached to us. And I just told them, for the most part, I needed help seeing what was potholes, manhole covers, but I really needed just to know where the people were. So when it got really crowded in water stops, I needed them to make sure that I didn't run into folks. Because when I ran by myself, I would kind of slowly merge into the water spout. But it was so crowded in a marathon that I would inevitably bump into people. And there are a couple times where, you know, you drink your water and you go to throw the cup. And because I have no peripheral vision, you know, I was hitting people, like throwing the cups at them. And I'd be like, sorry. Right. In the middle of a marathon, you can't be like, oh, sorry, I have really low vision. Please excuse me, right? So guides were helpful in, you know, making sure I didn't bump into people as we passed or going into, you know, the aid stations. And if there were any pressure points where things got crowded, they were really helpful with that. And then probably a year or two later, I started running, you know, with a tether. And when I started trail running, that was a whole other evolution of running, you know, with sighted guides and so forth.
Time for a quick message break. CS Instant Coffee is definitely the best instant coffee I've ever had. In fact, just out of convenience and how good it tastes, I decided for the last year I've been taking it on every single adventure I go on, from backpacking to bike tours, just from convenience sake. It's really high quality and it keeps me from having to take a bunch of other equipment out in the woods. But it's not just for going out on adventures. My wife actually takes some to work every single day with her. She takes a couple packs to refill her coffee mug as a teacher. She doesn't have a ton of time to have to, you know, make fresh coffee all the time. So she just needs a little hot water, can pour the coffee in, and she's ready to go for her next class and not waste a lot of time. So if you're crunched for time in your job, I would definitely suggest giving it a shot, because they have been huge supporters of the show for the last year, and I really appreciate everything they've done for us, and it would mean a lot to me to go support them. So if you're interested, go to csinstant.coffee and support those who are supporting the show. It would go a long way. Thank you. All right, let's get back to the episode. And so to paint a picture for listeners, it's you're literally tied to someone, like with a tether, like you said, to a guide who is running ahead of you and basically helping you navigate a course and on a trail, helping you navigate around obstacles, up and down passes and mountains, literally. And I'm sure that is a skill that you both learn to work together on and both get better at as you work longer with a guide. Is that correct?
It is. Running with a sighted guide makes running team sport. So we're working together, we're communicating, we are giving each other updates on kind of how I'm feeling and where my legs are. And my guides are, you know, not only incredibly committed to supporting me and others like myself, but they're also just very talented. They're talented runners, but they're also really strong communicators, and they're really passionate, and they take a lot of time and care when guiding to ensure that through sharing their sight, they're supporting me to reach my goals in getting, whether it's that halfway mark of the marathon or crossing the finish line of a 100-mile race. You know, that it's a shared goal that we have together as a team.
Do you have, when you go and do races, do you have to have new guides there, or you try to travel with the same ones?
It's obviously most of the time cost prohibitive to travel with guides. You know, when I ran Western States in 2019 through the support of Cliff Bar, I ran with their sponsor bib, and part of that was an agreement to fly out all of my guides from the Boston area. So that's, for the most part, the only race I've traveled to with my hometown guides. But in 2018, I ran the Yeti 100 down in Damascus, Virginia. And I had five guides that I never met before, four of whom had never guided at all, and one of whom had guided on the roads, was a very experienced road guide, but that was his first time guiding me on the trails. And then the other four runners, it was their first time guiding whenever. So I just have to put a lot of faith in the running community, both in terms of helping me network and recruit local guides, but then, you know, have phone conversations and swap a whole lot of emails with guides and kind of training them, you know, via email, via phone conversations.
Yeah, was it awkward running with five people you really didn't know? Was it small talk for the first part of the race? Like, how does that work relationally?
Yeah, I mean, you certainly chit chat. I tell folks, like, your main job is to guide me and call things out, but we're certainly going to talk. And to a certain extent, it benefits me, right? I tell a lot of folks, I'm really honest in that, you know, there is a benefit for me running with guides all the time. I have someone, particularly when you're doing ultra races, right? The 50 to 100 miles. And, you know, when you go into those really dark places, if you're running through the woods by yourself, you know, I always have a guide to chit chat with. And although their main responsibility is to physically guide me, they certainly help, you know, keep my spirits up, keep me moving. It's just human nature. I certainly try to limit that because I don't want them to be a pacer. I really want them to guide.
Right.
But the flip side of that is I sometimes get frustrated that I don't have those experiences that, you know, you hear folk often say, I love doing trail races and I love doing 100-mile races and those really lows and those highs when I'm by myself or, you know, through the nighttime when it's just me in the woods. I actually never get that experience. And sometimes it frustrates me, but I quickly flip the channel and say, you know what, I'm just lucky to be out here, regardless if I have to run with a guy all the time. I'm just lucky to be doing what I love to do. And there are sometimes where I will tell my guide, you know, just go up. I'm going to sit here, just go up a couple hundred feet, give me some space for a minute. And, you know, maybe I want to listen to the surroundings and my breathing, or maybe I need to just give myself an out loud, you know, pep talk to change my feelings and my mood.
I can imagine, man. Yeah, I mean, I can't tell you how many emotional breakdowns I've had alone, and I'm very glad no one I knew was around me because they would be like, okay, I don't think of you the same ever again because I saw you at your lowest, you know what I mean? You don't have that ability. You have to kind of have to keep it together because you're in the, you know, other people's presence, you know?
Definitely, definitely. And I'm, you know, I got to be more and more strategic with my guides. And one of my guides that I'm most comfortable with, that's run the most amount of miles with me. She just recently had a kid. So we haven't run together for 8 to 12 months. But prior to that, like, she was a quote unquote closer. Any 100-mile race or long distance race I would do, she would inevitably guide me the last 20 to 23 miles. Partly because she's the one I not only trusted the most as a guide, but I also trusted that she would understand where I was at when I have those moments, right? If I get cranky, like everyone else, right? I mean, everyone gets cranky after 80 miles, but I also have to be polite and nice at times to my guides. It's just human nature. It's respectful to do. But she was, you know, she understands if I snap or I get angry. So there's a while where she was always kind of closing my races out. Thankfully, I have, you know, a large network now of guides who I trust from mile zero to mile 100.
And so, if you don't mind, you know, speaking of children, she had a child. I know that you have a daughter. And is she 10, 11 years old around there?
She is 12 going on like 19.
Okay. 12 going on 19. Wow, man. So, you know, that had to be a tough decision. And I heard somewhere that you were sort of apprehensive about having children just because you didn't know what your future held. How has it been being a dad through all this? How have you enjoyed that?
Oh, it's amazing. I mean, it's the job I love the most and sometimes I hate the most, right? But yeah, I mean, I'm very lucky that, you know, genetically I had learned that, you know, initially I didn't want to pass, because it is a hereditary eye disease. I didn't want to pass it along. I just wanted to end it here. But then I learned, you know, through a genetic counselor that wasn't necessarily the case. And thankfully I'm very lucky and thankful that I still have vision, so I can see her and I can see her grow up and do all the things that, you know, parents love to experience. And she is also incredibly supportive, which I'm very thankful for. And it's a balancing act, right? I want her to, you know, be compassionate and mindful to support me, but I also don't want her to feel like she has to, or the burden of helping her dad in certain situations. And thankfully, she has been nothing but supportive in that sense, which I'm very fortunate and grateful for. And, you know, it's a big piece of, you know, my wife's support, and my daughter certainly sees that play out in real time and picks up her cues from there as well.
I mean, you know, I'm sure just going through all this, you realize it's the people around you that are just the most important thing in the whole world.
Yeah, definitely. No, it's, she keeps me engaged and keeps me hopeful.
So let me ask you this. If you weren't running, What do you think you would be doing? Because I know running is just a progression of walking, which you started off doing. Is there any other sport that you're really interested in trying or doing at this point?
So I'm a, you know, avid skier.
Yeah.
Although I haven't skied yet this season, but I grew up, actually I started skiing essentially the winter after I was diagnosed with my eye disease intentionally.
Oh, wow.
Because my parents felt that it was a sport that I could always do, which they were right. And so, you know, I love skiing. I love being in the mountains. It's a little obviously challenging being in Boston and getting access to the mountains. You're obviously very dependent on the winter and the weather, unlike being out in Colorado where, you know, you open your eyes every morning and there's a new foot of, you know, a new couple feet of snow. And I definitely want to get, I've never been kind of backcountry above tree line kind of bowl skiing. So that was originally going to be a goal of mine this winter, and kind of time just got behind me on that. And part of, to be honest with you, man, I mean, I grew up on bikes and BMX bikes and all that, but the notion of having a tandem bike in a really small house in the city is daunting to me, and the cost of it. Mm. And one of the things I love about running is, you know, I can just put on a pair of shoes and cross my street and run on the track by myself still if I need to. And I just really like that about running. Although I did go rock climbing this past weekend for the first time with my daughter, who loves it.
Oh, awesome.
And it was so much fun. So I would climb and, you know, she would kind of call out where the holds were, and, you know, left hand up or right hand or right foot. So that was really fun. But I was toast. My arms and my core are so weak. After I think the second, you know, kind of climb, my arms were shaking. I could barely grab anything. My fingers were sore already. So it was a nice reminder that, or not so subtle reminder that, you know, I can run 80 miles a week, but my upper body strength has a lot of room to improve.
So amazing what all of our different capabilities are. Cause then you get some climber that can, you know, climb a mile, but they don't run. They don't run five, you know? So it's amazing what all of our strengths do.
Yeah, for sure.
So, you know, maybe climbing, you know, more climbing in your future, cycling, maybe, I don't know. Tandem's definitely an option, but yeah, like you said, small home and very busy city for sure. And the cost, that is the simplicity of running. It is a beautiful thing. You know, what part of your life, what parts of your life would you consider pretty normal, you know, for most people? And then what parts are surprisingly difficult?
I think the word normal is subjective in the sense of kind of where you are in your life and what is happening. And for me, you know, I'm just like all of my peers, right? I go to work, I work a 9-to-5 or an 8-to-4, 8-to-5 job, and I'm really committed to the work that I do. And I'm also, both my wife and I are super active in our own community, which I think is a normal aspect for our household, to be really engaged in the community and to give back as much as we get and to help, you know, shape the future of our small-knit little neighborhood. And, you know, I think running 4 or 5 days a week, maybe the mileage is higher than everyone else is running, but just the pure joy of getting outside and experiencing the kind of outdoors in the way in which I do is normal in the things that we all enjoy about it. Certainly it's a little bit different in that I have to adapt and have a sighted guide. So, and, you know, in the parenting work that I do is, you know, run around manic on the weekends with, you know, 2 or 3 sports at the time and, you know, trying to be a present and active parent while balancing, you know, the running that I do and, you know, the stuff I need to do at home and work and that sort of stuff.
Is there anything that's surprisingly challenging that maybe people wouldn't think about?
I think the flip side of all that is just balancing it all, right? I mean, if I'm running at peak training, working full time, being a dad, being on a couple nonprofit boards, you know, if I hit 80 miles a week, that's my peak. So that's probably 20 to 25 hours of running. So just balancing that, you know, I'm very lucky and sometimes I take it for granted, which isn't always a good thing. But, you know, every Saturday and Sunday morning, I'm out the door at 7:30-ish and I'll run for 5 or 6 hours. You know, so I try to get in, you know, 7 to 12 hours of running on the weekend and then fitting in time on the weekdays. You know, I try to get to work by 7:30 so I can leave at like 4 But then, you know, Tuesday and Thursday afternoons, I got to get my daughter at 7 o'clock at night at soccer practice. I got to go pick her up and walk her home. Thankfully, it's a mile from her house, but you know, I would otherwise be running during that time. So I think it's just a balancing act and trying to fit all of it in while also keeping somewhat of a social life as well.
Right. So what do you think what is the biggest misconception that you come across the most often when you encounter people and talk about living with retinitis pigmentosa?
The biggest misperception and the hardest component of it, and I think Helen Keller said this beautifully also years and years ago, is it's actually the people who I interact with, right? So it's those preconceived notions and those stereotypes that folks have around people who are blind or visually impaired, or people who are unlike us in any way, right? That could be politically or physically or mentally or mental health wise. And I think one of the things that I try to use my running and my endurance sports and the brands I partner with, like Athletic Brewing, are to use that as a vehicle and a platform to change those perceptions and to really push back on those stereotypes. And by being active, being out on the trails and skiing and running, I want to, you know, sometimes not so subtly, you know, change those perceptions and do that through running.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Do you think there's any advantages that RP has given you?
Definitely. I mean, I'm a much more aware and compassionate person, even though some folks would laugh to hear me say that I'm compassionate, but it just makes me a lot more understandable, right? I mean, I worked for my first 10 or 12 years professionally. I worked helping folks who were living without a home, whether staying in shelters or on the streets. And I would never have done that work if I didn't start to realize that there are people out there in the world that need some support. And I would never have realized that if I didn't start to think about and internalize the support that I would need at any given time, whether it's 20 to 50, you know, 20 to 25 years down the road, or when I was 15 trying to deal with not being able to drive and have a license. So I think it's definitely informed my professional choices and my political worldview as well.
Man, that's inspiring. That's really awesome. It's like, and you giving back like this, you know, you're going to reap what you sow, man. And I'm sure you already see that. You say you have a really wonderful social life and just a, you know, blessed life. It's, you know, you use what you're going through to be able to see what's going on around you and how you can help not just yourself, but the people around you going through something similar or something at least parallel. And that's awesome, man. That's awesome to hear.
Thanks.
Yeah. So for the first rapid fire question, what are you most curious about right now outside of running?
I've been thinking a lot about the whole sober curious movement, which I learned through Athletic Brewing and the recent event that I attended there. So that's got me intrigued a little bit.
Oh, very cool. Awesome. Yeah. It's growing rapidly. There's a lot of great options out there, but what is your proudest achievement outside of running?
Being a parent.
All the parents say that. All right. So next one, what is your biggest goal that you haven't yet achieved?
I would like to get out in the backcountry and self-powered hike up, skin up some big, huge mountain and drop in off it on a pair of skis.
Awesome. What is a quick piece of advice that you give someone who is facing something where they feel that they're limited now in what they can do?
Sit in the space that you're in. Embrace it and then adapt and continue to move forward.
And how do you personally live without compromise?
I don't accept the boundaries that others place on me. I continue to push through and around those boundaries.
Well, Kyle, is there anything else you'd like to share or any links that people can follow your journey?
Sure. So folks can follow me on Instagram. I'm at Blind Beer Runner, and Twitter is just Kyle, middle initial R, and Robidou. And then I do more and more public speaking. Some folks call it motivational speaking. And my website is just kylerobidou.com.
Perfect. And every one of those will be in the show notes. So if you are driving or at work and you just pull out your phone, look at the show notes, and it'll be there for you to click on. So
Well, thanks for doing what you're doing with Athletic, and hopefully we can meet up in person at some point.
Yeah, absolutely. All right, man. Have a great night, and thanks again. Bye.
All right, bye.
First of all, thank you so much for listening. It means the world to us that you choose to listen to this show. If you'd like to help us further, you can leave a review on iTunes, share us with your friends, your family. It goes a long way to grow in the show. You can also support us financially through patreon.com/adventuresportspodcast. Link is in the show notes. And also, if you have an idea of who could be a good guest for the show, we're always looking for people to tell their story about the outdoors or adventure. So if you know someone, please reach out. Email us at info@adventuresportspodcast.com. And until then, get out there and have some fun.
As humans, we're naturally driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. When I was looking to hire someone, it was so slow and overwhelming. I wish I had used Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform, with over 350 million global monthly visitors according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/podcast. That's Indeed.com/podcast. Terms and conditions apply.
Swimsuit? Check. Sunscreen? Check. Phone charger? Check. Don't forget to pack the 5-Hour Energy. It fits great in a pocket or carry-on, and the alert feeling will help you arrive ready for anything. Now get 20% off when you use code 5HETRAVEL at 5HourEnergy.com. Expires April 30th. One-time use only. Not valid with other discounts. Remember, visit 5HourEnergy.com and use code 5HETRAVEL to save 20%.